Food prices have increased over 40%. Energy prices have increased over 20%. Wheat and gas prices have increased over 70%. What's going to be next? Do you see these trends reversing or even stabilizing? All fiat currencies have always failed and collapsed their economies on their way down. The Roman Empire, China, France, Argentina, Finland, Mexico, Russia, and Zimbabwe all tried fiat currency and all collapsed into chaos. Meanwhile, the dollar has lost over 97% of its gold value since 1971, when an ounce of gold was valued at $35. If your assets are in paper, you are in danger. Protect your assets with gold and silver. Visit Discount Gold and Silver Trading at DGScoins.com. That's DGScoins.com or call 1-800-375-4188. That's 800-375-4188. Protect yourself and your family.
Ladies and gentlemen, I'm Melody Cederstrom, and you're listening to Financial Survival. I'm here with my co-host, Alfred Adisk, to bring you our opinion and commentary on today's economic and political events for Friday, February 27th, 2015. Good afternoon, Al.
Hi, Melody.
Oh, what a day we had in the precious metal prices today. It's trying. Gold and silver, it's working on it. Had a high at 1220, very similar to yesterday, had highs, couldn't hold it, so we're only up 320. That's all right, 320 at 1213. We have silver up a penny at 1664. We have platinum up 13 at 1190, and we have palladium up 7 at 819. The USDX today was down early, and then it's back up 0.02 at 95.29. Didn't expect much out of that after the big heyday it had yesterday. It had crude oil that took back some of its losses from yesterday, up a little over a buck at 49.28. And the paper markets today, you have the Dow trading down 82 points at 18,132. Along with the NASDAQ down 24, 49.63, S&P down 6, 21.04. 10-year yield that was down also today, currently holding at 2% of the 10-year yield. Euro 1.12, that dropped. Surprised that you didn't have, maybe that's why the dollar came back today. You had the euro down earlier, it was up. So a lot of reversals on everything. The foreign markets are pretty much a mixed bag. So not a whole lot to talk about there, but a lot of people, you know, hear a lot of comment. We talk about it here every now and then that people don't know what to do. You have all these stock markets, these paper markets hitting all-time highs, and they're dumb enough they can't figure out what to do. It's like, well, there's only one thing you should do. And but I guess they'll have to wait until it drops a couple of thousand points, then they'll all run for the door. But the Commerce Department today said that the U.S. economy grew at an annual rate of 2.2% in the October-December quarter. And, of course, that is weaker than the 2.6% first estimated last month. And this last estimate certainly marks a major slowdown from the third quarter, which had the strongest growth in 11 years, if you believe their numbers. I mean, you don't go from the strongest growth in 11 years down to the you know, 2.6%, but so it's still slightly up from the growth in 2013, but the certainly the last quarter, when it should be the strongest quarter of the year with the holidays and everything, unless people are buying, you know, in that third quarter and not the last quarter, which I find that highly unlikely, not with the access to the internet. And I don't know. You also had the National Association of Realtors. They came out, adjusted pending home sales index increased 1.7%. to 104 in January. December's figure was also, of course, revised higher to show a smaller decline. You know, they just can't leave the numbers alone, can they, Al?
Nope.
Just really fun. Just can't leave them alone.
We have economy by numerology, Melody.
Yes. Consumer confidence slipped today or this month. It remains still at the highest level in 8 years. The University of Michigan's index, consumer sentiment, dipped to 95 from an 11-year high of 98 in January. So the overall consumer's assessment of the economy and their expectations for the future both fell.
Well, I don't doubt that's true. I mean, we have had remarkably high levels of consumer confidence lately. I don't say it's rational necessarily, but no doubt that's there. And it shows up different places. It shows up in people's way, whatever they're interested in, and the rest that people are more optimistic for the moment. And we have to sit back and wonder, is that optimism? Is it reasonable, rational? Is it based on fundamentals? Or is it somehow just emotional and subjective? Whatever the explanation, it's here. It certainly makes a difference in the economy. For the moment, things are going to apparently go well, but there's a lot of doubt.
Well, I figured they probably couldn't find a lot of those consumers. They were lost in the snowdrifts.
It may be that this fierce winter is going to have another effect. It's like we're going to have to move the United States to a warmer climate, that's all, so we're not afflicted by winter weather in the wintertime.
Well, I'll tell you what, one of the Weight Watchers, their stock slid almost 35% after the weight loss program operator issued an outlook yesterday that their profit was going to fall far below Wall Street's expectations. 35%. Huge.
Yeah, and
huge.
Are we talking in a day's time?
Yes, today.
That's just,
from yesterday afternoon, fell 35.
That sort of thing will get you talking to yourself if you happen to be investing in Weight Watchers. 30% fall in one day, that's enough to, oh my gosh.
Yeah, went from 11 to 6. So quite a dump there on Weight Watchers. And today, the Greek PM, I know we talked about this earlier this week, with Greece's new government, they have no intention of seeking yet another bailout deal from the international creditors and will spend coming months trying to ease the terms of its current commitments. And they said today Alexis Tsipras came hours after Germany overwhelmingly approved the four-month extension of their bailout. He comes out and says, oh, you know what, this is the last time. The bailout agreements are done, are over, done. They know.
Yeah, but that's pretty much what he said when he ran for election, and he's only been sitting in these. He only won election about 5 weeks ago now.
Some people are betting on a third bailout in July, he says, but we will disappoint them.
We'll watch and see. He's saying it. We'll see how it works
just
out.
Just another distraction.
I don't know what at all any of it is. I'm sure they've taken a lot of heat because they cooperated with the European Union in going for another four-month extension in order to get, my understanding is, $8 billion. The European Union and the IMF, the European Central Bank, they're going to give Greece another $8 billion, if I understand correctly, provided that Greece continues to promise to pay the $300 billion that it owes. So, If you stay on the hook for $300 billion, we'll give you $8 billion. Yeah. We'll watch and see how that works, but it's got to come to an end. Mm-hmm. They can't pay the $300 billion. That's all. They don't have it. And what that means, we're going to do restructuring. They want to restructure their debt, but restructuring is just a polite word for we're bankrupt. All right? Restructuring means that if I owe $100,000, we're going to restructure that debt and I'm going to agree to pay $50,000, which means what? I can't pay the $100,000 I owe. And if I can get my creditor to agree that, okay, I only owe $50,000, then we can maintain the illusion that I'm still financially solvent. And that's what restructuring is all about. Instead of coming out ahead and say, look, the guy's broke, he can't pay his bills, he's bankrupt. Mm-hmm. Well, we're not going to admit that the Greece is bankrupt, or at least not yet. We're going to say we're going to restructure. We will restructure the debt. Sounds very sophisticated, but what it is somebody's not paying their bills. They are technically incapable of paying their bills, and therefore they are bankrupt. Right? So the idea behind restructuring is that we will maintain the illusion that the government of Greece is not bankrupt. Mm-hmm. That's the idea. And why are we maintaining that illusion? Well, in order to lure other people into perhaps lending them some more money. But beyond that, I think the entire system is set up in a way where they don't want to admit that any of the governments are insolvent, and virtually all of them are. They don't want to admit that. So, oh, no, we're just restructuring. We're not broke. We're not bankrupt. We're just restructuring. There is something about this. They don't want to admit that the governments in the Western world are broke, and they don't want to admit that any of them are. But I think inevitably they're going to have to, and if they do, then we're going to see a serious change in the consumer confidence levels. All right? They may be at the highest level in a long time right now, but sooner or later we're going to find a time when the governments of the world have to admit the truth, which is that they can't pay their bills. Greece is among the first to do so. Ukraine is another one, though. They're right there. I've got an article to talk about Ukraine a little later in the program, perhaps, but among other things, it points out, do you know what the minimum wage is in Ukraine right now? Melody, do you know?
Well, do you tell us, Al?
Well, it's $49 a month. You understand that? They are so broke that their minimum wage is $49 a month. I mean, it gives that number gives me chills. It gives me goose pimples. I mean, oh my God. Imagine that you were living in this country and the minimum wage is $49 a month. People complain about the minimum wage in this country, but oh my God, the people making minimum wage in this country are living like millionaires practically compared to the people that are living in Ukraine. It's an astonishingly low figure, and it's the sort of thing that can only point toward social instability, starvation, depression, political chaos. Ukraine's in big trouble. And they can't probably afford to continue to fight, struggle with Russia. They're going to probably have to let the eastern Ukraine go just because they can't afford the bullets. So we'll get into that maybe a little later in the program. I've got another one here, Melody, unless you have something you want to add.
Well, I just wanted to add that this is going to be the second year. And, you know, we talk about inflation and our food, and here's the second year that there's a lot of farmers in Central Valley, California, that will not receive federal water. And that part of the country grows much of the nation's produce.
Yep.
And so you have California is entering its fourth year of drought, and you have the Mid-Pacific Regional Director of the U.S. Bureau of Reclamation said that the federal officials are doing everything possible to increase water deliveries during the dire dry conditions, but many farmers feel that they're not going to get any water, so therefore there's a lot of fields that can go unplanted, meaning the produce that comes from that area, those that do get water, the prices are going to be considerably higher. And along with that, you also have the average price of a pound of ground beef climb to another record high at $4.23.5 per pound in January. And this is according to the Bureau of Labor Statistics. In August of 2014, the average price of ground beef topped $4 just for the first time. And but in January 2015, the ground beef has hit the highest price ever recorded at this level. And a year ago, it means that the average price increased in 1 year over 22%. So, you know, this is what people are
We don't have any inflation.
No, and this is what people are dealing with when they're having difficult times. And when you look at the holidays, shopping and the consumer, their confidence and so forth, that's shocking, 22% in a year.
I understand that. You wonder, where do they find consumer confidence at almost record highs?
Stock market. That's all they can. They fake it for the stock market high. It's all psychological.
Well, I understand.
That's why it's so important to keep those numbers up there and constantly grow.
Yeah. Well, you know another reason to support the markets, for government to support the markets, I suspect, is that stocks are probably being used as collateral for loans.
Absolutely.
Right? Which means if something happens to those stocks and they go down, they got to have to call in the loans. And there are probably $10 worth of loans out for every dollar worth of stock that they're holding in vaults, in bank vaults. And that being the case, if the market goes down, oh my gosh, we're going to have to call in a bunch of bank loans. So this is another reason they are now caught in this insane world where we treat debt as assets. And we've used these debt instruments as if they were assets, and all it does is, it may seem like a great idea at the time. You sit back and say, oh, we're going to use a piece of paper and pretend it's an asset, see? And then we can stimulate the economy. Well, yeah, it does. But eventually the day inevitably comes when we do too much of stimulation, government goes too far, and we finally have to look at those pieces of paper and say, uh-oh, the value is actually falling. And we can no longer stimulate and artificially increase these values. And as a result, they are beginning to fall and decline. And if they do, we're going to have to call in loans that were, insofar as any of the stock was used as collateral for loans at banks, we're going to have to call in loans, and they're going to cripple the economy. And what it gets down to is if you're going to, it's just like doing drugs or taking alcohol. You know, you go out and get drunk and you have a great time. Oh boy, you know, I'm the life of the party. I'm stoned. All right. But guess what? You're not going to be the life of the party tomorrow morning when you wake up. You're going to be hungover. And the same thing is true in economics. You do that stimulus, seems like a great thing for a while, and then all of a sudden comes the next day, and you got that hangover, and you say, that's it, I'm never going to drink again. That's a lie. You'll drink the first chance you get, but for the moment, you say, I'm done drinking. We're going to take a break for some commercials. I'm Alfred Addis here with Melody Cederstrom. We'll be back on Financial Survival in just a moment. Please stay tuned.
Stress, financial obligations, or relationship problems have you feeling stressed out? When life is too much to handle, use Apothecary Herbs' Emotional Stress Formula. Feel calm and more in control with herbs especially combined to provide the organic nutrition your system needs to help you cope. Complete instructions for maximum benefit and a money-back guarantee. You've waited long enough. Call Apothecary Herbs now. Toll free 866-229-3663. That's 866-229-3663. 888-229-3663. International callers dial 704-875-8010 or order online at thepowerherbs.com.
Food prices have increased over 40%. Energy prices have increased over 20%. Wheat and gas prices have increased over 70%. What's going to be next? Do you see these trends reversing or even stabilizing? All fiat currencies have always failed and collapsed their economies on their way down. The Roman Empire, China, France, Argentina, Finland, Mexico, Russia, Zimbabwe all tried fiat currency and all collapsed into chaos. Meanwhile, the dollar has lost over 97% of its gold value since 1971, when an ounce of gold was valued at $35. If your assets are in paper, you are in danger. Protect your assets with gold and silver. Visit Discount Gold and Silver Trading at DGScoins.com. That's DGScoins.com or call 1-800-375-4188. That's 800-375-4188. Protect yourself and your family.
American Voice Radio Network is heard on Galaxy 19 at 97 degrees west, transponder 23, frequency 12115, audio PID 2595. AVR is heard on the left side audio channel, and AVR 2 is heard on the right side audio channel. Remember, both AVR and AVR 2 are on Galaxy 19. Same network, double the choices.
Hi, folks. I'm Alfred Adask here on Financial Survival with Melody Cederstrom, and the program is brought to you by Discount Gold and Silver, 1-800-375-4188. What's next, Melody?
Well, we're just going to go, you know, I just want to bring this one thing up, and this is on the Congress today approving a short-term spending bill for Homeland Security Department. It's just like, oh, to avert a partial agency shutdown, but we're only going to do this for 3 weeks, and then we got 3 weeks to determine what we're going to do with it, and blah, 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 blah. And it's just like, it's just another joke.
Yeah, no.
And it's like, what are wrong with these people? And yeah, I don't want to hear that they're bought and paid. I mean, do they even realize the idiots that they look like they are? I mean,
yeah, they don't care, but the money.
They really don't.
It's like playing Clarabelle the Clown on with Buffalo Bob on Howdy Doody. I don't know how many of you remember that program.
I do.
Probably most of you don't, but I do. From when I was 10 years old or whatever it was, 8 years old, I don't know, 5, 7, whatever it was, Buffalo Bob. You dress up like a clown. Why? Because the money's good. That's why. It's the same thing with the Congress.
I mean, it's just... And then they're all at these CPAC meetings, all up there. All these Republicans are up there giving their little speeches and talks and so forth. And you know, like you know, we're here and we're going to make a difference.
Yeah, I know.
Yeah, they're going to make a difference, all right.
Mm-hmm.
And anyway, I thought that was, you know,
everybody's
the same way.
Making a difference. I wish these people would stop making a difference. Obama is involved, and yes, we can, and change you can believe in. We don't need any change. You understand that? We've had enough of your change. What every congressman and senator in the country needs to understand is you people don't have brains enough to come up with one more program that's actually going to help the United States of America, the people of the United States of America. You might help some special interests, but always to the disability of the people of the United States of America. One way or another, every one of your idiot programs means government gets bigger and government charges more money in terms of taxes. And that's what's killing this country more than anything else. We're being destroyed by our own government. You know, back when I was a kid, back in 1950, the total tax burden was about 15 cents on a dollar. My dad got to keep 85 cents on the dollar, and that's the reason why my mother could stay home and raise me and my sister. Today's young man gets to keep probably about 40 cents on a dollar, and maybe not even that much. By the time you take out state taxes, local taxes, federal taxes, hidden taxes, you take out the total tax burden that's imposed on most people, and it's going to average out around 60% of their income, and they get 40. It's the reason why the man's wife doesn't get to work as if it was some great blessing. She has to work because today it takes two people to generate a standard of living comparable to what my dad could generate back in 1950. Why? Because government has raised taxes a little and a little and a little more and a little more. And it's always for some great idea, good idea, and what else. And it's all a bunch of crapola. They're killing this country with government. Right? And it's got to end. And if the people don't recognize, and the sad thing about it is as we get deeper into poverty, as we come closer to poverty and the lower middle class begins to grow and the impoverished class grows and the middle class disappears, as we get deeper into it, we necessarily become more dependent on government. We wind up thinking we've got to have government to provide unemployment, and we've got to have government to provide disability insurance, and we've got to have government to take care of us. Why? Because government has put us into a kind of financial bondage. And we are deceived into thinking that the very entity that's responsible for impoverishing this nation is the entity that can save this nation. It's craziness, it's madness, but it's the way people tend to think. They have short-term ability to perceive. You know, the idea behind intelligence is in many regards just a matter of being able to say what's next. Okay? If you can see what's next a day from now, okay. If you can see what's next a week from now, you're more intelligent. If you can see much of what's next a month from now, a year from now, a decade from now, your intelligence is to some degree indicated by how far you can perceive into the future. You can look at a guy who plays chess, and you know the average typical chess player is making one move, and then he waits to see what the other guy's next move is going to be, and then he reacts to the next move. If you're a brilliant chess player, you already know what your opponent's four or five next moves are going to be before he makes them. You are seeing into the future. Well, it's unfortunate, but we have a people, a nation that is unable to perceive very far into the future. And therefore, we are inclined to think whoever gives us money, that must be our hero, that must be our savior. That's the government. And nobody realizes that it's the government who's taking the money away from productive elements of society in the first place, and therefore pushing us deeper into poverty, away from prosperity and so on. So if the public ever figures this out and comes to understand who its real adversaries are, we might be able to save this country. If they can't, we're going to all be goose-stepping around like good little Germans before this is over, or communists, but we're going to live in an economy and a nation without a dream, without an American dream. We won't hope for prosperity. We won't hope to live better. We'll just hope that we don't wind up jailed. That will be the American dream, that I don't get sent to the gulag. And that's kind of where we're heading if we don't wake up and realize principal adversary, principal enemy of this country is government. And that's not radical talk. This is the essence, it's the essential idea behind the Constitution of the United States. The whole idea of the Constitution, we recognized we had to have a federal government, but we proposed limits. We said, you can't do this, you can't do this, you can't do this, you can't do this. We are only giving you limited powers because we don't trust you as far as we can throw the Washington Monument. That was the fundamental idea for checks and balances and elections every 2 years and the right to keep and bear arms and freedom of speech and freedom of press. And most of what we see in the Constitution was intended to protect us from the big government. And because the founders understood government is not your buddy, it may be a necessary evil, but it's not your pal. They tried to protect us. We've abandoned that protection. We forgot about it. We have reached a mentality, at least a lot of people have, where they say, oh, the government is our buddy, our pal, they're our savior. It's just not true, and it can't be true. Although it can appear to be true for a while, it's not, in fact, true. It's that same idea, let's take some drugs, get high, be somebody. Well, sooner or later, you got to sober up, and when you do, oh, you're going to say, what was I thinking when I took those drugs? What was I thinking when I took that?
And usually it's too late by the time you figure that out.
Yeah, I know. That's
your life
problem.
Is gone, and you're in a position where there's not a whole lot you can do about it. You're sober, and perhaps you can find your way to God. That's probably the only way you've been able to sober up, but usually most things are your life is gone. Speaking, you know, you talk about government. Here we have Lois Lerner's.
Mm-hmm.
Remember all those emails that disappeared?
Yep.
Thousands upon thousands of emails they couldn't find?
Yep.
She was on. Well,
it was a mystery.
Golly. Yeah. It just took 2 weeks for them to find over 32,000 emails. And
that's going to be an interesting little treasure trove.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And there is, in fact, they are now beginning a criminal investigation
yes.
into this matter, which means before we're done, Ms. Lerner and or some of her buddies and pals just might wind up doing some time in the slammer.
Plus, it'll be interesting to see if she starts squeaking.
Somebody will.
Somebody should.
There's 30,000 email there. You know what I mean? How many emails can you make in a day?
Actually, Al, they also have additional 424 tapes that they're saying could contain even more of these emails. So
there's no way that everything has been concealed. You know, with the internet, the idea that I've said it a bunch of times, there is no secrecy in the internet age. All right, none you can rely on. And that's not just true for you and me. That's true for the government. You know, Edward Snowden is a classic illustration of that fact. People can take government information, make it public, and oh my gosh, now the government's got a terrible problem. Same thing with Lois Lerner. Same thing with everyone in the government who thinks you can engage in schemes to defraud or disenfranchise the American people. And you use the email at all, it's going to come up. I have no idea how many copies there are of email I've written in the past year or 2 years or 5 years or whatever. There might be a 500 copies of them floating around someplace on the internet.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it's all in, and with government, it's necessarily multiple copies. You can say, oh, we lost the hard drive. Yeah, there are probably a dozen or 50 or 100 hard drives. And you can't lose them all. Now, it's an interesting thing. It's funny, at least to me. But it's also maybe a good thing. Lois Lerner just might be the poster child for behaving yourself in a manner that is honest and not deceptive and not engaged in fraud, just do your job. And if you're in the government, do your job. And it's not your political job, it's the job. You understand? Do it. Huh? And don't discriminate against people, because if you do, your emailer is going to show what happened. And when it does, and I don't think you can conceal it. So, who knows? It may be that the internet and the lack of privacy that we all complain about, none of us are comfortable with it, but nevertheless, it's got to be especially discomforting for criminals. You know, people that are honest and honorable, I don't want the government spying on, you know, me and my relationship to whoever, you know. Call up my girlfriend or send her an email or something like that. I don't want the government reading that stuff. Huh? But on the other hand, if part of the trade-off for the government keeping an eye on me is that the government winds up keeping an eye even on itself, they have more secrets to hide than I do. So, might be a good thing.
Might be. What's next, Al?
I've got something here from James Clapper, who is the head of, he's the intelligence czar for the United States. And the head, this is from the Washington Times, and the headline is James Clapper, half the world's stable countries at risk of instability. Breaking sharply with Secretary of State John F. Kerry's far sunnier assessment just the day before. The Obama administration's intelligence czar told Congress on Thursday that political instability and state-sponsored mass killings are at their highest rates in decades. And the U.S. still faces ominous challenges from China, Russia, cyber terrorists, and the continuing turmoil in the Middle East. Director of National Intelligence James R. Clapper told Senate Armed Services Committee that more refugees were spawned by conflict and other crises around the world in 2014 than at any time since World War II. And he went on to say roughly half of the world's currently stable countries are at some risk of instability over the next 2 years. What he's telling us is, you know, same thing we've been telling you over this, on this program. We're not the only ones to do so. But the world is becoming increasingly unstable. And you can't sit back. And here's the director of national intelligence. He says, yeah, you're right. The whole place is getting ready to go up for grabs. Now, what does that mean? Will we be completely isolated from that instability? Can we get by and maintain fiat currency, for example, our fiat dollar? Will that survive in the event of global instability? Here's the director of national intelligence. He says roughly half of the world's currently stable countries are at risk of some instability over the next 2 years. He goes on, when the final accounting is done, 2014 will have been the most lethal year for global terrorism in 45 years since such data has been compiled. A testimony was in stark contrast to Secretary of State Kerry's testimony to Congress just the day before, in which the nation's diplomat argued that despite the challenge of the Islamic State and jihadi violence, the world is actually seeing a period of less daily threat to Americans and to people in the world than normally. Less deaths, less violence, less violent deaths today than throughout the last century. Now, what is going on here? All right? We have the director of national intelligence. He says that we've had more crises spawned by conflict and more refugees spawned by conflict and other crises in 2014 than any other time since World War II. All right? He's saying that mass killings are at their highest rate in decades. And that's the day after Secretary of State Kerry says, nope, 2014 was really the most fun year we've had in 45 years. What are we supposed to do with this, Melody? You know, we've got one guy that says the world is becoming a more fearsome place, and we have another one. And we're not just talking about whether we have two radio talk show hosts that disagree on whether the world is becoming more or less violent. We're not talking about Rush Limbaugh versus NPR or something like that. That's not what we're talking about. We're talking about two principal figures in the Obama administration. And on two consecutive days, they give us two completely different assessments of the threat that we're facing in this country or in the world right now. Which one is right, and how are we supposed to make up our mind what to do? I'm Alfred Addis. We're going to take a break for some commercials. I'm here with Melody Cedarstrom. Be back in a moment. Please stay tuned, and maybe we'll answer that question or try to.
A heart condition and emergency rooms and medical doctors are not an option, you need our emergency heart attack kit. 5 concentrated liquid formulas enter the system in 60 seconds to protect your heart muscle, strengthen heartbeat, increase circulation, relieve pain, and make breathing easier. When seconds count, you want all the help you can get with our emergency heart attack kit. Easy to use and portable in a 1-pound compact kit for your purse, briefcase, or car. Call Apothecary Herbs now for your emergency heart attack kit toll-free, 866-229-3663. That's 866-229-3663. International callers dial 704-875-8010 or order online at thethepowerherbs.com.
Since the beginning of the United States, kings have sought it, nations have fought for it. It has been traded, borrowed, purchased, and stolen. There is a reason for it. To secure the blessings of liberty to ourselves and our posterity, invest with the security of gold and silver. Call Discount Gold and Silver Trading at 1-800-375-4188. That's 1-800-375-4188. Listen to Financial Survival with your host, Melody Cedarstrom, on American Voice Radio Network and Shortwave Radio. Visit DiscountGoldAndSilverTrading.net or call 1-800-375-4188. That's 1-800-375-4188. For the very best in gold and silver trading, call toll-free 1-800-375-4188. That's 1-800-375-4188. Call now.
Hi, folks. I'm Alfred Adisk. I'm here with Melody Cedarstrom on Financial Survival. And Melody is chuckling in the background.
Yes, I am.
We've got two people. You know, we have the Director of National Intelligence, James R. Clapper. He says we are in the political instability and state-sponsored mass killings at their highest rate in decades. And the day before, Secretary of State John Kerry, where was Kerry's testimony? He says, well, the world is actually seeing a period of less daily threats to Americans and to people of the world than normally, less deaths, less violent deaths today and through the last century. One guy says there's peace in the valley. The other guy says, "Uh-oh, we got big trouble." Who's telling the truth, Melody? Do both sides know?
Kerry always reminds me of a cartoon character, and like he just isn't even with it. And you know, perhaps his comments are to protect Miss Hillary, of whom position he took over. So maybe they're just trying to protect her by saying this. Again, he's talking what Obama wants him to say. Of course, you know, Obama is there.
Yeah, but how
terrorist.
Can it be that the Director of National Intelligence is not saying what Obama wants him to say? There's a disconnect here. Somebody, one of these people, is not functioning as an Obama puppet. There's the problem. Now, which one is it? Is the Director of National Security saying, ha-ha, I'll tell the truth, to heck with Obama? Or is it Kerry? Somebody didn't get the script.
Our armed forces are very much, and I'm not a military person, but they're very dissatisfied with what's going on. And there is a big disconnect from the administration to the military services, the armed services. So perhaps this is why Clapper is maybe a little more direct, maybe a little more telling the truth. Maybe he did exaggerate it a bit, but I don't think Kerry certainly is far more out of the realm of
Kerry is still playing politics, I'd say.
He's,
all right? You never know.
He may still have a shot
at the White House. I think that's the way Kerry looks at it. I may still get into the White House and be president, and so I better be politically correct. Clapper is a senior citizen. Right? I don't know what his age is, but he's probably, looking at him, he looks to me like he's in his 70s.
I think it has more to do with the, you know, with the military aspect, the armed services and so forth. They're very dissatisfied with the administration.
Here's my point. While Kerry is still hoping to be president, Clapper understands he's got everything he's ever going to get. He's not going to get any bigger. He's not going to be president. He's not going to get beyond director of national security. And it might be, you know, you get to a point when you are mature, where you finally don't see a compulsion or inclination to tell lies. You stop playing the game and just say, look, here it is. What are you going to do? Fire me? I've been eager to go out on retirement for decades. I don't care. I'm going to tell the truth. I think maybe that's what's happening. If I had to guess, I'd say that Mr. Clapper is probably telling us the truth, that the world is more unstable than it's been in decades. And if he is, then we need, you know, it's another one of those leaves in the breeze. You can't, if the director of national security, if he's saying, look, we got big trouble around the world, that's consistent with what other people have been saying. And we talk about this on a fairly regular basis on this program, because what it points to is sooner or later, one of the multitude of potential hotspots around the globe is going to erupt into flames. And when it does, we can wonder what the consequences will be. We can wonder what kind of a domino effect is going to be seen, and how far will it go. And, you know, can a problem in Ukraine or Greece or France or Spain or Portugal or Ireland, or a problem in all of them, is that enough to actually tip the U.S. dollar into a difficult situation? My opinion, the answer is yes. Some people would disagree with that, but just the same, you know, you make up your own mind. You see 100 problems out there, you got to assume one or two of these things are going to break loose, and what happens when they do? This again, you know, that Titanic analogy. You know, they say the ship can't sink. I'm not so sure. Maybe it's a good idea to stay close to your life preserver. If it is, get ready.
What's next, Al?
I don't know. God, here's one that's interesting to me, at least. This is from mining.com. They study the mining industry globally in the United States, around the globe. And here's the headline from their article. This is a little bit out of their, you know, out of their, they're usually talking about tunnels and holes in the ground and rest, that sort of thing. But in this case, the headline is Apple buying a third of world's gold to meet demand for iWatch. Apple's coming out with a new iWatch. Right? And according to this article, it says technology giant Apple may soon buy up one-third of the world's gold in order to meet the demands for its highly anticipated Apple Watch. Interest in the high-end model featuring 18-karat gold casing is picking up, and the firm is already taking the necessary steps to have enough of them in stock. According to the Wall Street Journal, Apple plans to start producing more than 1 million of these watches per month in the second quarter of this year, anticipating high demand from Asian markets, mainly China. Josh Centers from Tidbits estimates that each gold watch will contain 2 troy ounces of gold. Does that make any sense to you, Melody?
That's a heck of a lot of gold.
I agree.
You know, particularly when it's
$3,000 worth of gold in your wristwatch. Just the physical price of the gold, $3,000. Then they could put in a Timex movement in a watch, and you're still going to have a $4,000 watch, and they're going to probably want more than that. And they anticipate selling 1 million of them a month, if I read this article correctly. Yeah, 1 million units per month. At $4,000 or $5,000 per watch, and each one 2 ounces. That's 2 1-ounce gold coins fastened to your wrist, plus the movement. That makes no sense to me. I'm not able to understand that. I mean, I really question that number. 2 troy ounces of gold. I question that. But in any case, based on the estimated sales figure, this guy, Josh Centers, concludes that Apple will need 746 tons of gold per year, or about 30% of the world's annual production for their wristwatches. His estimations would mean Apple may soon become a major player in the world's luxury watch market, grabbing about half of it. Okay, they're going to be in watches are one thing. A third? I mean, it would mean they're going to be a major player in terms of buying gold. I don't care about luxury wristwatches, but if the numbers are correct, they're going to buy a third of the world's gold production? I don't know. What do you think, Melody? Does this make sense?
They talk about an 18-karat gold casing. To me, that is the watch face, not the band. You're not talking about the band. Let me finish. So an 18-karat, that's not even pure gold. So they're using other alloys in there from 18, you know, to, you know, it's less gold than what you have in a gold eagle. So that would have to be a huge. Now, I'm not talking about dollar-wise, because, I mean, you can buy Rolexes and many other, you know, French and Swiss watches that are $10,000, $15,000, $80,000. Yeah. And, you know, they have less gold than that. Yeah. So, to me, I'm thinking, you know, so this isn't – that watch would have to be huge.
I know.
So, no, I you know, perhaps – now, if they include the band and they're just strictly men's watches and so forth, but that's a heck of a lot of gold.
Yeah, it's hard to believe.
It's hard to believe.
2 ounces of gold. They especially say two troy ounces. Troy ounces are bigger than regular ounces.
It is interesting.
You punch somebody, ha, 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 I'm going to smack you over the head with my gold watch. It'll put you out. You understand? This isn't just a timekeeper. This is a weapon. You know, you pull on, bam, it's like having a blackjack if you want to smack somebody in the head with it. It doesn't make good sense to me.
Plus, if it's an iWatch, that means it's a computer watch, and therefore you would have other types of mechanical things going on in there. Now, if all that mechanical wear and computer wear is all made out of 18-karat gold, well, then maybe it wouldn't be just the casing of it. It'd be all the mechanical parts of it.
No, there won't be
maybe, but there isn't that much to make a watch. No. Well, you know, I don't know what an iWatch would be, but
no, it'll be purely digital. There won't be anything moves inside that watch, probably.
Well, I mean, you could still have your card and you know all the chips and so forth. All that could be made with gold and so forth, but it's still two ounces is quite a bit.
Got another article here from ZeroHedge.com. This is what happens to gold in a hyperinflationary currency crisis. They're talking about the Ukraine. As Ukraine's socioeconomic situation tends toward chaos, today's announcement by President Poroshenko that the government will take action to stabilize the currency has Ukrainians rushing for the exit into precious metals with only one goal in mind. Wealth preservation. They have got a graph here that you folks can't see, of course, but it's the spot price of gold priced in hryvnia, right, which is the Ukraine currency. Hryvnia. And it shows from 2010 through 2015, and the price more or less from 2010 through 2014 stayed within the range, even on first quarter 2014 stayed within the range of 10,000 hryvnia to 15,000. All right, it was more or less flat over a period of what would be 4 years, I guess. But starting at least the last quarter of 2013, first quarter 2014, price of gold in hryvnia have been going up significantly. They increased from 15,000 hryvnia to 20,000, 25% increase in 1 year. And starting earlier this year, first quarter 2015, the price has gone from 20,000 to almost 40,000 hryvnia in a month, basically 2 months. That means this has doubled. Price of gold in Ukraine has doubled, or conversely, the value of hryvnia has fallen in half. It was dropped to 50% of what it was just a couple of months ago. And he goes on, and the point is that in the midst of hyperinflation, you're going to see the price of gold just go up, 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 just straight up. All right? This is rocket science in a sense, because you're just watching this thing lift off. You know, they have lift off in Ukraine. Further, Ukrainian television channel Ukraine announced that with the new exchange rate, the minimum wage in Ukraine stands around $42 per month, which, according to the channel, is lower than Ghana or Zambia. There are currently no plans to raise the minimum wage until December of this year. Can you imagine having a minimum wage job making $42 a month? A month? Maybe $2 a workday? I mean, this is just, oh my God. This is terrible. This is terrible. I mean, people are going to die of this. This is going to be chaos. This is going to be violence. If this doesn't get turned around, it's going to be a terrible situation for everyone in Ukraine. Food prices among producers rose 57%, with the price of grains and vegetables rising 91% from January 2014 to January 2015. While the official inflation rate over that period totaled 28%. The government is telling us, oh, we have only 28% inflation, but their food is up, but somewhere between 57% for everything and grains going up 91%. In a year's time, government says, oh, it's only 25%. They've got the same problem there as we have here, trying to get straight numbers out of their own government. When the prices increase that dramatically, we are now talking about hyperinflation. Ukrainian consumers responded to economic difficulties by cutting their spending in hryvnias by 23%, which amounts to an almost 40% decrease in real consumption. And what's that mean? It means a hyperinflationary depression. If they're cutting spending by 40% in real consumption, it means they are headed in beyond just recession. They're in a depression. And they're having hyperinflation at the same time, and a hyperinflationary depression, worst of all possible outcomes. You know, you can go into a depression, and if prices stay more or less the same, not so bad. Right? You might not have as much economic activity, but survivable. But a hyperinflationary depression is where, one, because you're in a depression, you're losing jobs, you're losing wages, people are going broke. At the same time, prices are increasing dramatically due to hyperinflation. It's not just a question of, gee, I don't have a job. It's a question of, gee, I don't have a job, and the price of groceries is doubling on me. It's hard enough to take care of the groceries when you don't have a job. It's double hard or more to take care of the groceries when you don't have a job due to an economic recession, depression, and price of current, or the price of the value of your currency is hyperinflating, and the cost of your projects.
Hey, this is a song we're going to end out with. Leonard Nimoy, he passed on today. If everybody remembers Dr. Spock, Al, I don't know if you were a Trekkie or not, but I didn't know he was a singer, and this was a little tune that I found on the internet, and I think everybody remembers the Live Long and Prosper. So we just want to end this with Leonard Nimoy, singing If I Had a Hammer.
Well, if I had a bell, I'd ring it in the morning, I'd ring it in the evening, all over this land. I'd ring out danger, I'd ring out a warning, I'd ring out love between my brothers and my sisters, all over this land. Well, if I had a song, I'd sing it in the morning, I'd sing it in the evening, all over this land. I'd sing out danger, I'd sing out a warning, I'd sing out love between my brothers and my sisters, all over this land. Well, I have a hammer, and I have a bell, and I have a song to sing all over this land. It's the hammer of justice.
It's the bell of freedom. And the song is the song of love. Love between all of my brothers and love between all of my sisters all over this land.